This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Today is an anniversary, a dark one, but an important one, and we're going to talk about that tonight. Let's talk about citizenship, visas, immigration. That'll be always fun and spicy. Are we getting somewhere with Ukraine? All that and more coming up on I'm Right. Okay, so we need to talk about something I've been hot on for the past couple days, because there are different schools of thought on the right, and we need to address them when it comes to America itself, citizenship, immigration, visas, things like that. Okay, so first, let's divvy up the two different sides of the right and left. I'm not talking about leftists. I'm not talking about what they want and what they say. We already know. We don't have to dwell on the fact that American communists believe in filling up America with foreigners of any kind, legal, illegal, doesn't matter. Just bring in as many foreigners as they possibly can. We know why the communists want to do this. We know why the Biden administration did this. This allows them to cement their power by eliminating the vote of the patriotic American citizen so they can pillage this country and burn it to the ground with the permission of the people who live here. We got that. That's why communists love immigration. That's why Joe Biden got elected and promptly went to drool on himself and the Maoists in his government opened up this country and brought in as many millions as they could. They were so committed to this, they actually flew people by the million into the country with your tax dollars. So we got that. That's the left. That's the communists. We're not actually talking about them right now for our purposes. For our purposes, and I'll just use this as an example, let's just talk about this guy, Mahmoud Khalil, Columbia University. Who was he? Well, he's here. Visa. And while he was here, he decided to cause a ruckus. All his crimes are alleged at this point in time, but this is where the right gets all mixed up. I want you to look at a video really quickly of Mahmoud Khalil. I just want you to look at this, and then I'll tell you why I don't care about his crimes.
Are you guys going to listen to the university and leave the encampment here?
Of course not. The university is the one who should listen to us. They should listen to their student body who are demanding to end their investment in the war that's happening in Palestine. Our demands are clear. Our demands are regarding divestment from the Israeli occupation, the companies that are profiting and contributing to the genocide of our people.
How far are you all willing to go here on campus?
We're going to go as far as we need to pressure the university to pressure the university to divest from the occupation.
Our demands? Do you hear what he said? These are what our demands are. Did you hear how he opened that whole thing? This is what they should do, and they should do this, and they should do that. Pause on that. We'll come back to Mr. Mahmoud. In fact, we're going to come back to the American right and immigration and visas and everything like that. You know, I've done some world travel. Oh, obviously, I didn't grow up with a lot of money, so we didn't, you know, when we were vacationing, we were driving down to Tennessee to go fishing. That's what we did. But my time in the Marine Corps had me see a couple different places, Japan, Thailand, some not so great places in the Middle East. And since then, I'd say in recent years, now that my kids are getting older, we've done a little bit more world travel. We've been to Mexico. I've been to Canada. I've been to Italy. Went to Germany. Went to a couple places like that. Nothing super fancy, but a couple places, cool little places. I'm going to go see this place here and this place there. And I'll tell you something. This has nothing to do with politics, left, right, middle, nothing at all. Whenever I go anywhere, Mexico, Paris, doesn't matter where it is, I always try to make sure I am my best behaved. In fact, I try to do that here at home, right? I try to be a law-abiding citizen and be a good citizen in every way. I don't throw things on the sidewalk. I don't do those things. But when I am overseas, I am not only mindful of the fact that I am a guest, I make sure that I tell my sons that over and over and over again. I have two teenage sons, and I tell them, boys, we are a guest here. This is not our country. It's not our legal system. We don't vote here. So at all times, you will be completely polite. You will do as you're told. You won't even jaywalk in Rome if you happen to be in Rome, because you are a guest, and guests should always be on their best behavior, no matter what, without exception. That's how I behave, and that's how I insist my sons behave when I travel to another country. But here in the United States of America, there have been two different forces at work that has held us back from enforcing those kind of standards on our arrivals. First are the dirty communists. We already mentioned them. We'll set them aside. They just want to flood the country with as many barbarians as possible. There's another part, though. We're better than that. We're really nice guys. The Constitution. That little wing of the right. That's not an insult on the Constitution. There's a wing of the right that believes, that has bought into this insane lie, that somehow, for some reason, because of the Constitution or God or I don't know what justifications they use in their mind, that people should be allowed to come here, visit here, without citizenship, and just be able to do all the stuff Americans get to do. Well, it says so in the Constitution. I'm a citizen. As a citizen of the United States of America, I get to protest if I want to. As long as I do it legally, as long as I don't impede certain things, as long as I do it legally, it is my right as an American citizen to protest. If you are an American citizen, even one of the dirty communists who hate watches this show, if your papers say American citizen, you have the right to protest as long as you do it legally. You have that right as an American citizen. If you are a guest here, you shut your freaking mouth or you get sent back from whence you came. That is basic citizenship. And it's practiced by every other country in the world. And for some reason, the low-T GOP wing of our useless party seems to think, well, I mean, Thomas Jefferson and the founders, the Supreme Court ruled one time that this savage should absolutely be allowed to just do whatever he wants whenever he comes here. No. Am I saying that foreign protesters should be thrown into a dark dungeon and have their fingernails pulled out? Of course not. Absolutely not. But you should be immediately deported from this country. And just so I'm crystal clear on what I'm saying here, I am not saying that people who speak out against Israel should be deported here. I'm saying anybody who causes any noise at all for any reason whatsoever, who's not an American citizen, should be sent home. If you are here visiting, visa, I don't care what your status is, and you get a speeding ticket, that should come with a warning next time you're gone. You don't get to go down to the city council and protest your water bill. You don't get to do anything because you're a guest. You can go to class. You can go to work. When you're not doing those things, you can sit in your apartment and shut your freaking mouth. Or maybe because you're a guest here, you should do some volunteer work. Go pick up trash somewhere. Go help the homeless. Do a prison ministry. I don't care what you do, but what you don't ever get to do is cause trouble here because you're a guest. You are not an American citizen, and being a citizen comes with citizens' privileges. Otherwise, what is the point of being a citizen at all? There is no point. And then we get stuck with these segments on the news when we start quibbling back and forth about what the who, what, when, where, and why. I saw Abby Phillips is on CNN with Scott Jennings. What about the evidence?
Have you seen any evidence to suggest that there is actually a serious reason to believe that this student is going to be a threat to to national security.
I mean, I've certainly watched the abomination that's gone on at Columbia and Barnard and other places.
Okay,
and I'll just
so
tell
a
you,
threat to national
and, I'll,
security?
And I'll just tell you
no,
that
I
his.
Mean, I,
his
I'm not going to let you move on because this is. The
yeah, problem. I'll tell you why it's a threat to national security if you let me answer you.
Well, Scott,
do you want me to answer you or not?
Okay.
His organization says we are dedicated fighting for the total eradication of Western civilization.
Okay.
He's not a citizen. He doesn't need to be here.
You just described him having viewpoints that you disagree with. Again, is that enough to have someone lose their rights in this country?
He has viewpoints that, in my opinion, jeopardize the security of the United States.
But how? It is not clear that this particular student has engaged in the specific actions that he was talking about. And you've shown me no evidence of that either.
Okay, well, guess what? He is not a citizen. If he were a citizen, I might feel differently. He's a guest in this country.
Okay.
It's my view.
So in other words,
it's the Trump administration.
You don't have proof, but it doesn't matter.
You don't have to get in these arguments at all. Oh, what evidence do you have? Well, I was checking through the website, and if you look at his papers and it... I don't need to get in these arguments with anybody for any reason whatsoever. I don't care what he was protesting, actually. Doesn't matter to me. In fact, I don't care what country he came from. The only evidence I need to see is, where is he a citizen? Because if it's not the United States of America, he doesn't get to go to any university, even when I hate, like Columbia, and make demands. He doesn't get to demand things at all. This is how things will do, or else. You are a visitor here. When I visit my in-laws' house, I put the toilet seat down. I will admit, I don't do that all the time at home. When I visit the in-laws' house, I ensure that everything is in order with myself and my family because I'm a guest. That is how guests operate. But here in the United States, I'm not even talking about the savages on the left. There is a portion of the right who somehow believes that we are obligated as a country to just be a big fat port-a-john for anyone who happens to waltz onto American soil, and that is gonna be a no for me. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. We will talk to a panel about this next. Maybe we'll get some disagreement on that. Before we talk about that, let me talk to you about sleeping. I love sleeping. It's the best. Woke up this morning, 6 a.m. Woke up this morning, ready to rock. Why? 8:30 last night, because I'm old and boring, I decided I wanted to go to bed and read a book with the wife. Poured myself a little cup of hot chocolate, just a little glass of milk in a coffee cup, put it in the nuker, pulled it out, put some dream powder in there. Hot chocolate is what I had. It's chocolate cinnamon, and I just sat there as I read my book, sipping on it. Set the cup down, off to sleep. 8 hours later, 6 a.m., I'm up and ready to roll. That's what dream powder can give you every day. And it's natural, right? It's drug-free, natural. Get some good natural sleep. Up to 40% off at shopbeam.com/Jesse Kelly. We'll be back. All right, so let's discuss this immigration thing because a lot of people love it, a lot of people kind of hate it, a lot of people, well, I guess those would be barbarians like me, think it actually doesn't go near far enough. It's too narrow. As I said, I'm fine with deporting some Syrian dude for protesting. That's fine, fine with me, but we need a lot more. Joining me now, Brittany Mayer, host of the Britt Mayer Show, which is wonderful, I might add. Brittany, what am I supposed to make of the narrowness of this? I guess that's the part I dislike the most, when I see a bunch of illegals roaming through the streets of New York talking about how they don't want to be deported. I think all those should be rounded up too. Why is anybody allowed to protest here if you're not a citizen?
Jesse, you're such a racist. I'm clutching my pearls. Yeah. I'm shocked. I'm shocked and offended, deeply offended. No, I'm with you. I am. I'm so disgusted by the response to this whole Mau Mau Khali. I don't even know how you pronounce his name, but this guy who came here at the pleasure, the good pleasure of the United States of America to study at one of our greatest universities. He was given this privilege, and then he used this privilege to incite violence, unrest, false imprisonment, intimidation against American citizens. And now you have the Democrats up in arms saying, this is about free speech. How dare the Trump administration? They're coming after you next. No, this is not about free speech. There are boundaries when it comes to free speech for foreign nationals who are granted the privilege of coming to America. And he overstepped those. Especially, I was watching our press secretary talking about this, and she specifically laid out how this guy was handing out Hamas propaganda on campus. That is aligning with a terrorist organization. This goes well above and beyond free speech. But I'm with you that even in this narrow issue, I do not believe that we should have foreign nationals at all protesting in the country that they are given the good grace of being in.
Yeah, they sure are. Speaking of foreign nationals, J.D. Vance, who's been unbelievably impressive, I'm just so impressed with him so far, came out, he said this:
"We've also unfortunately made it way too easy for people to compete against American citizens for the precious homes that are in our country to begin with. You go across the world and you see a very consistent relationship between a massive increase in immigration and a massive increase in housing prices. And we have to be honest about that." Well, I see one of our nice representatives out here wants to actually, I guess, continue to flood the country with illegal immigrants, making your communities and citizens unaffordable. But ma'am, with all respect, one of the reasons why we're doing what we're doing is because we want to make it more affordable for Americans to live.
Britt, you've never seen anything like housing prices go up because of illegals in California, have you?
Oh, no. I mean, we are clearly, you can tell that people are just flooding into California because of how affordable it is. We don't have a mass exodus happening here in California at all. No, I actually pulled some stats earlier because I was looking at this issue. And in the narrow scope for California in particular, just for Medi-Cal and education, it's costing us $4.9 billion annually for the cost of being a sanctuary state. A sanctuary state that, I might add, protects illegal foreigners. It does not protect American Californian citizens. For the broader scope, we're looking at about $23 to $30 billion, and these would include welfare, law enforcement. Even, you know, if you're an illegal alien that comes into California, you get granted access to an attorney. So not only is it driving people out because the housing market is absolutely insane, and I've seen that personally. I mean, just where I moved into a few years ago, the prices have nearly tripled, you know, in the time since we moved in here. But additionally, it's costing us as taxpayers and as small business owners greatly. So there is a huge cost to this notion of being benevolent and letting in anyone who wants to come in. And we really have to start to examine the cost that Americans are taking on in being so benevolent to just allow anyone at any time, illegally or with a green card, to come into America. This has to be an issue that we are healthily debating. And unfortunately, the Democrats just don't want to have this conversation.
Britt, along those same lines about the people pouring in here, I think we should have a conversation about all the religious, and I'm very much using air fingers quotes on that, all the religious NGOs who are bad actors in this, Catholic NGOs, Christian NGOs, Jewish NGOs, Mormon NGOs, a lot of these commie NGOs use religion as a skin suit to somehow try to biblically justify filling up the country with rapists and barbarians. In fact, you can find all kinds of skinny jeans wearing loser pastors in this country trying to do the same thing. Somehow, I don't even know how you would get to that logic, but it's really gross to see.
Yeah, we have a huge issue of that out here in California, both the skinny jean pastors and the NGOs that are an arm and apparatus of the state, and it's become a racket scheme where they are funded by our taxpayer money, and then they're used to our own demise, to bring in by literally the boatload. We in California saw an average of, I think at one point we were averaging 4 of those Ponga boats coming in a month. You know, that And they were bringing in anywhere from 15 to 30 illegal aliens who then disappeared because we had SUVs waiting. There were bonfires that would signal to the waiting SUVs where they were coming in under the dark of night. Well, then when that became so easy because there was no pushback against that, they just started coming in on Saturdays with little kids building sandcastles. So we had that issue. But then on the border, the land border, we had NGOs hanging out, readily accepting these illegal aliens who would cross over, and they would welcome them with waters, with iPhones, with papers, showing them where the nearest airport was and where the housing facility that was set up by these NGOs was available to them. And then they were transporting these illegal aliens from either the beaches or our land borders to these housing locations. And then in the case of San Diego, we spent millions of dollars on a bougie welcome center that then vetted and processed these illegal aliens, which basically means we welcomed them with open arms and sent them sailing into the United States of America as ghost foreigners who ended up in your backyard. That's the reality of this racket NGO system in America.
Tell me what you've seen change in San Diego, because my word, did me and my meathead Marine Corps friends have a bunch of really good times in that wonderful city back in the day.
I grew up in San Diego, so I know what you're talking about. And it's not the same San Diego that it was when you were a meathead out here, Jesse. It's become so much, to be very honest, it's become so much dirtier, so much more unsafe. The homeless issue is overflowing now. It is no longer safe for me as a woman to walk through downtown San Diego or even any of those beach towns that you probably remember because of the amount of homeless and illegal aliens that we have brought in. We brought in four times the amount of the Padres Stadium in San Diego just in 1 year alone. Oh. That's an insane amount of illegal aliens that we brought in. But here's the clutch line, is they did not stay in San Diego. Our San Diego International Airport was a shuttling ground for these illegal aliens. So yes, San Diego has changed and it's become much more unsafe and unlivable because of cost and because of the people that we have brought in, and we don't know who they are. But additionally, we have sent them flying all over the United States. So they're landing in conservative areas. This is not just a San Diego issue. It's not just a California issue. This has become a national security threat. And that's why I'm so thankful for Tom Homan coming in and saying that he wants to clean house. He wants to deport en masse. I am all for that.
Why don't they vote differently? I ask this a lot. I'm not worried about you, but I ask this a lot of people, my friends in New York City who get so frustrated, and they all have Democrat friends, right? They all know somebody, because that's most of the city. And every time I ask one, are they getting ready to vote differently? Because they're all mad about crime. They're all mad about the homelessness, just like this. And I've never once had an answer of, oh yeah, they're gonna vote differently the next time. Oh, every time it's, well, no, they're not. They're mad, but they're not going to change their voting behavior. Do you know any Democrats? Are they ever going to change?
You know, we are seeing a flip out here in California. Gavin Newsom is at one of his lowest favorability ratings right now. There's actually a recall effort underway right now against him that is gaining a lot of momentum. You have Mel Gibson, who just spoke out about recalling Gavin Newsom due to the LA fires and the mismanagement there. So on a lot of levels there, I have seen a change, even in the wealthier areas in California where I've gone in and I've spoken with people there. They're not as quick to defend Gavin Newsom, even as they were after the French Laundry exhibit. So I do think that things are changing. I'm not sure how quickly, but like I said the last time I was on with you, I think we are going to see California turn red. I wouldn't be surprised if we see a success in this recall effort against Gavin, just because the survival of the fittest for Gavin Newsom is not looking so good anymore. But we'll see. We'll see if the Democrats are just so dumb that they can't vote their way out of this, or if they're actually realizing that the cost of their vote is costing us fires that are burning us down, and unfortunately just the corruption of California that we've seen, law and order, and this illegal invasion.
Fingers crossed. Britt, as always, thank you. All right, we have an anniversary we have to discuss. Kind of an ugly one, but it's an important discussion. We'll do that in a moment. Before we do that, let's get your cell phone switched up, your cell phone service. And I normally tell you to switch to Pure Talk because they share our values, they hire Americans, all those things. And all those things are true. But maybe it's just time for you to get a new phone. How many cracks do you have on your screen? How many times have you dropped that bad boy? Run it a little slower now than it was, but you don't want to spend the money on a new phone. If you see what they charge for new phones, I don't blame you. Well, when you switch to Pure Talk, you not only save a fortune on your monthly bill, with the qualifying purchase, you get a free iPhone 14, this brand new iPhone, a free Samsung Galaxy. If for no other reason, switch and get a free phone. And you save a bunch every month. And you support the cell phone company that supports and shares your values. Go to puretalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back. Today is our anniversary. You and me. 5 years. It is our 5-year anniversary of the tyrannical, evil COVID lockdowns in this country. That's what it is. And we are going to discuss it for a couple minutes, just a couple minutes. Then I have a reason for it. And no, I know you're going to be shocked by this. It's not so we can look back and pat me on the back for telling you how bad it was all going to be. The far-reaching consequences of what we're doing to try to stop the spread of this virus, maybe they're necessary, maybe they're not, but we are talking about massive, massive economic losses coming, and that's just the truth. I'm not downplaying the fact that the virus spreads like wildfire. I'm not downplaying the fact that the virus is dangerous to old, sick people. These things we're doing, man, they are drastic measures. I hope they work because we are going to be feeling this for not just, you know, the coming months, for years. No, we're not going to be in lockdown for years, but the economic impact of this is going to be, it's going to be something. Well, here we are, 5 years later, and as you sit here watching I'm Right, just know that there's a big budget floating its way through Congress, a big bill with spending levels equal to the spending increases we did during COVID. It's not just that we felt it then. Today we feel it. Are you angry about inflation? Are you angry about all the things in your life that cost so much money? You do remember the genesis of all that, right? It wasn't Joe Biden. The genesis of all that was stopping a $20 trillion economy for a chest cold. The genesis of all that was in junk science, garbage, ridiculous concepts like social distancing. Do you remember? Don't forget. Don't let it go. Do you remember standing in the grocery store with the little feet? You stand here and you stand there, and you had to walk up to the cashier who had the stupid sheet of plastic in front of it and the dumb little paper mask on? Do you remember? Let's just focus on social distancing for a moment, because I know you remember when they all suggested it.
Here's what I want you and America to know. Those projections are definitely sobering, but they don't have to be our reality. If we really do our part, stay at home, social distance, then we can flatten our curve even below those projections.
Social distancing is absolutely critical. And if you can't social distance and you're outside, you must wear a mask.
Other than wearing masks, washing hands, avoiding crowds, and social distancing, what more on a policy level do we in the United States need to be doing?
Well, what we've got to do is make what you just said, Jake, uniform, not spotty. Everybody's got to do it. There's no excuse not to do that right now, because we know that can turn things around.
It's no excuse. Everyone has to do it. Just social distance. I just want to remind you that social distancing, that was what destroyed your child's education. Social distancing. That was how they justified you having to say goodbye to your dying mother on a Zoom call. Social distancing is how they justified wiping out a third of the small businesses across the country as the land of the free, United States of America, turned into North Korea because of a virus. Social distancing. Oh, and I think now would probably be a good time to remind you, out of Scott Gottlieb's own mouth, they made the whole thing up.
The initial recommendation that the CDC brought to the White House, and I talk about this, was 10 feet. And a political appointee in the White House said, we can't recommend 10 feet. Nobody can measure 10 feet. It's inoperable. Society will shut down. So the compromise was around 6 feet.
Oh, we just compromised. How we get the? I don't know. I'm not sure. Whatever. Just make them do it. They took a concept. No one even knows who exactly came up with it. Arbitrarily picked a distance and then just issued orders to the entire United States of America. And you had to say goodbye to your dying father on FaceTime. Couldn't even have a funeral for your grandpa. And I do want to remind everyone, in case you're sitting there, this is common. We do this to ease our own minds. Maybe you're sitting there making excuses. Well, nobody knew. That's a bald-faced lie, for one. Lots of people knew. The people who did know were censored right and left. Lots of people were trying to make a difference, trying to find affordable, easily available fixes for all this. As soon as somebody, remember Joe Rogan came out and said, I got it and I treated it with ivermectin. Remember America's deeply, deeply, demonically evil system came out and told you ivermectin was horse dewormer.
Ivermectin is something more often used to deworm horses.
Rogan telling his 13 million Instagram followers that he was treated with several drugs, and he included ivermectin on the list, a drug used for livestock.
Rogan said the word ivermectin. Yes, that's the deworming medicine made to kill parasites. And
so things are clearly bad, but they're being made even worse by people who have refused to take the vaccine and instead are swallowing horse paste.
Evil. It's not dumb. That's deeply evil. What happened to this country 5 years ago was evil. And I don't care what excuse they try to come up with next time, and there will be a next time. It may not be a virus, probably won't be. They'll pick something different. Next time, they'll tell you it's for your own safety, or it's for your own good, it's for the greater good, it's for public health. They'll insist that you just have to give up these rights and those rights and those rights. Just stay home, just shut down your business, close the school, lock your doors. Make sure next time, unlike last time, we all embrace what being a free person actually is. Just a reminder. All right, let's move on. Let's talk about the UK. Let's talk to someone in the UK, see how things are going over there. Let me talk to you about something American, though. Wasson Watch. My watch company. Well, it's not mine. I just love them. Friends with the owner. He's a United States Marine. He fought for this country. He is not just the man who makes these high, high-quality watches, amazing gifts, I might add, but he's a man who's chosen to put his beliefs into the watch company. How many watch companies do that? How many watch companies have you ever heard in your life come out and vocally support the unborn, the lives of unborn babies? Wasson Watch does this all the time. How many watch companies come out and talk about your Second Amendment rights? Wasson Watch does it without fear. Doesn't that appeal to you? It sure does to me. It's not just the quality of the watch, which is amazing. It's that they share my values. 10% off a Wasson watch for you. WassonWatch.com, promo code Jesse. We'll be back.
Today, we've made an offer that the Ukrainians have accepted, which is to enter into a ceasefire and into immediate negotiations to end this conflict in a way that's enduring and sustainable and accounts for their interests, their security, their ability to prosper as a nation. Now, hopefully we'll take this offer now to the Russians. And we hope that they'll say yes, to peace. The ball is now in their court. And but again, the president's objective here is number one, above everything else. He wants the war to end. And I think today Ukraine has taken a concrete step in that regard. We hope the Russians will reciprocate.
Good. I'm hopeful. Good. I'm still blown away by how bizarre that meeting was. I'm blown away by how committed so many Western powers have been, us included, to continuing this thing without end. I wonder what Connor thinks about all this. Joining me now, Connor Tomlinson, writer with Courage Media from across the pond over there in the UK. Connor, I've been marveling at my own country, especially under Joe Biden. I don't know what you're thinking about yours. and just how weirdly committed everyone is to keeping this thing going without end. They almost had it over a couple years ago, and the Western powers said, no, keep going. I don't get it.
Well, one of the reasons that the war wasn't over a couple of years ago and Zelensky didn't acquiesce to a peace deal when less land had been lost to Russia was because our former prime minister, three prime ministers ago now, Boris Johnson, decided to pose as a Churchill figure on the world stage and demanded Zelensky keep going with the support of NATO, the EU, and the US. And he signed all of our collective countries up to give Ukraine aid until the heat death of the universe or either side runs out of men. The problem is now our leaders are trying to keep the war going because they're trying to ride the coattails of improperly applied Second World War analogies. So until the end of time, every single conflict boils down to one party being Hitler and the other party being Churchill. And so Zelensky is Churchill and Vladimir Putin is Hitler. But Donald Trump is also Hitler for trying to stop Hitler and Churchill from fighting. Oh, and by the way, you can't be Chamberlain by appeasing Hitler abroad, but you have to be Chamberlain at home because you have to practice multiculturalism, because if you don't bring all of those very illiberal minorities into your country who don't respect Western values in the first place, you're also literally Hitler. So you have to be Churchill abroad to fight Hitler, but you have to be Chamberlain at home to not be Hitler. And this is why all of our leaders are saying garbled nonsense about this conflict. And really, the only person that's doing anything practical about it to stop people dying, conscripts dying on both sides, while also ensuring that the American taxpayer gets a return on investment for all of the aid they've provided to the Ukrainians, is President Trump.
Connor, can you help me understand the whole Boris Johnson stepping in thing? Because I've heard this multiple times from people who would know he wasn't just kind of some side thing. He was the leading figure stopping the peace deal. Now, I'm not as familiar with this guy as you are. Is it just as simple as he wanted to be Churchill? Is there something more nefarious here? It's just, it's honestly, it's so evil on its face to just stop to stop the stopping of a conflict like this. I don't understand.
I think domestic conflict played a lot into this. So for context, the UK had, I think, the sixth strictest lockdown in the world between 2020 and early 2022. And Boris Johnson accelerated the end of that lockdown while he was getting briefings of incursions on the Russia-Ukraine border. And he was very unpopular and ended up being ousted as leader of the Conservative Party, because while he imposed these lockdowns where people couldn't see their dying family members, attend funerals, spend Christmas with their loved ones, he was having numerous parties in the garden of Downing Street, and lots of his staff were having drinks. And he wasn't present at all of those parties, but lots of them were pinned on him. And it was endemic of the culture in Downing Street, where he thought there was one rule for we, the political elite, and one rule for the rest of the plebs that we impose it on. And Boris Johnson was tanking in the polls at the time because of his handling of lockdown and because of his perceived hypocrisy, and this dragged out until the summer. But the only thing that was keeping him popular in any way to the British public was his handling of Ukraine, because he was unwavering in his instance that Putin was the aggressor, that this was the Second World War rewon, and so he had to play the part of Winston Churchill. And he's still trying to play that part, even after over a million Ukrainians and Russians total have died, and even after both sides really haven't moved very much. I mean, the Russians have spent an awful lot of blood on the conflict, but not nearly as much treasure as the sanctions would have liked. The Ukrainians have spent a hell of a lot of blood and a lot of our treasure, and as much as we'd like to say, you know, if it were our country, we wouldn't give up a part of it, it doesn't matter how much we would give up. What matters is how much we can defend of our own accord. And the problem is, without a lot of taxpayer-subsidized aid from the US, the UK, and Europe, the Ukrainians are barely hanging on by a thread. So actually, Boris Johnson put them in a war that they cannot win, and now President Trump, to his credit, is trying to get them out of it, while the rest of the European Union saber rattles on behalf of escalating a war that they themselves don't have the troops to fight. I mean, just one quick stat for you, Jesse. The Times ran some polling earlier this year for Generation Z in the UK, and only 11% said they would fight for the UK. What they mean by this is only 11% said they would fight to sign up to die in a war that the UK would involve them in. Lots of that's because lots of Generation Z, the very diverse generation in the UK, don't feel the UK is their country. But a lot of it is because young, straight white men like me know we are public enemy number one of the modern anti-racist woke state, who have been told since birth that pretty much every war is bad and have seen every foreign policy venture in our lifetime fail, and are thinking, why would I fight for this particular world order? Why would I fight to put pride parades in Kyiv for a government who doesn't like me very much? So even if Europe involves its populations in these wars, they can't really do anything without America's say-so. They don't have the troops to fight it, and they also don't have the energy to fight it because they've spent, in the last year, more money on Russian gas exports than they have on aid to Ukraine while the war's going on. So, complete hypocrisy. President Trump's the only one that's speaking sense on it.
Okay, so what was Starmer talking about, your PM, for those not aware? What was Starmer talking about when he was talking about, we'll send the planes and the troops? He made it sound like Lord Raglan was sailing through the Dardanelles as we speak.
Well, if you notice, he said that and then immediately said, if America wants us to. What he was trying to do is get a clip for the UK media, who for some reason doesn't like President Trump very much. They haven't realized actually how much good the revolution, the second American revolution across your side of the pond is doing and how much we would want to copy that, actually. He was giving clips to them to try and soothe his ailing popularity, because he is, and his government is, the least popular government on record. They got fewer votes than Jeremy Corbyn did in 2019, an actual communist that Starmer threw out of the party, when he lost to Boris Johnson and gave him a landslide. But just because the previous Conservative government was so unpopular, because they, among other things, let in a million immigrants every single year to a country that is the size of New York State, he won by default. Now, after his mishandling of various crises like the Southport murders and the grooming gang scandal at the start of the year, which is still going on and nobody's doing anything about it, he knows he is hated by the majority of the country. And the one issue he might be able to claim some ground on is, much like Boris Johnson, pretending to be Churchill and standing up to big bad meanies, Hitler, Trump and Putin. And so what he's done is tried to position himself as, have you ever seen the film Love Actually? Hugh Grant's PM in that, where he gets to stand up to big bullish America and make the UK look good again. That's how he thinks he can regain his popularity. But if President Trump draws it to a close, well, he can't grift off that issue and it isn't working.
Connor, immigration. Obviously, we have our own problems here, and they are massive. And I'll be honest, I don't know if we can solve ours. I don't know if we can fix 20 million people imported in 4 years by one president. I don't know if it's even realistic to get that many people out of the country as badly as we need it. Your situation over there may be even more dire than ours, which is saying something. Can Britain save itself, or is it too far gone when it comes to this?
Well, as for the situation of our immigration, as I mentioned, England in particular, because they get the most amount of this immigration, are the size of New York State, and we get a million immigrants a year, which is the same level of legal migration that the whole of the United States gets. And of course, your porous southern border, porous under Joe Biden and the various uniparty traitors before President Trump, saw millions crossing every single year. Well, ever since 2018, we've had about 160,000 men in boats crossing from France like they're the Viking invaders. And they're mainly from North Africa, Sub-Saharan Africa, Iran, Pakistan, Afghanistan, and Turkey. And we found out yesterday in the pages of The Telegraph that a quarter of all sex crimes in this country are committed by those migrants. Some of them are 77 times more likely than the native British population to commit sex crimes. And that's broken down just by being from somewhere else. It's not broken down by ethnic origin. So it's even worse. But of course, the government doesn't track that data because it makes it look too bad. So we're getting hundreds of thousands of illegal migrants and a million a year legal migrants, 95% of whom do not pay more tax than they take. So we are hemorrhaging economically, rapidly changing demographically. Muhammad is now the most popular baby name in England. And if you're asking, will this nation of Muhammad's abide by British values, you're asking the wrong question. Crime is through the roof, and no government is looking to stop this anytime soon. The one party that we do have, which is or was until this week, the most popular of the polls, Reform UK, Nigel Farage's party, has just called the police on their most popular MP for having an argument with their Muslim party chairman. And anonymous sources have said, we wanted to get rid of him because he was radicalized by the online right to support mass deportations. Bear in mind, the majority of the British public support deporting all the illegal immigrants in this country. There are over 2 million, by the way. A majority of the British public actually support President Trump's policy of mass deportations, and promising mass deportations just won President Trump, not just the popular vote, but a large share of Hispanic men who know it's a common sense policy. So why does Nigel Farage not support this? And why is he persecuting his own MPs? And why is he sabotaging his chance to take power in 2029, delivering the popular policies, which are the only way to uphold the rule of law, that the British public actually want? It's baffling. And honestly, Jesse, I don't see a way out of this anytime soon.
Crap. Well, I'm rooting for you guys, brother. Come back soon, as always. I hate that. And I know I'm the ugliest of ugly Americans, but I have a soft spot in my heart for England. I don't know what it is. Actually, I do. They have a really cool culture, historically. Really cool military tradition there. I love the fact that they were this global naval power once. It's a cool place. The food's garbage, but it's a really cool place, and I want them to come back. Anyway, we're not done yet. We have more. Hang on. All right, it is time to lighten the mood. And I think everybody remembers DJ Daniel, the kid from the Trump speech, the joint session of Congress, basically the State of the Union the other night. Kid, 13 years old, battling brain cancer. He's the one who got the Secret Service badge. Maybe you thought that his little time in the limelight was going to come and go. No, it's not going to, but it turns out, because it turns out this kid just has charisma dripping from his pores.
Yeah, you think your friends are going to be jealous?
Pretty much, and I'm pretty sure my girlfriend gonna be jealous, cause she ain't gonna be. I'm gonna be like you gonna have to hit the road, Jax, because I'm a Secret Service now. I'm not, and if you touch me, you going to juvenile straight. And I ain't gotta ask your parents for nothing. I'm sending you straight to jail.
You know, DJ, when you get older, you'll learn that women have an interesting way of dealing with those situations. A lesson for another time, young man. It was good talking to you. Thank you.
So good. I'll see you tomorrow.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty on Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty on demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.